Bathrub Spears Broadsides. You are listening to Free Radio, 89.3 FM. Call in 427-3772 if you've got a mind to. I'm Bathrub Spear Robert Norris. You're going to be listening to Bathrub Spears Broadsides for the next 2 hours with our special surprise guest, Right On Rebecca, who you just heard disking the night away here. She's going to give us some insights on being young in Santa Cruz at the current time. Before I put her on, I want to let you know what we have coming up today on Bathrub Spears Broadsides. We've got endless reports on what's been going on, particularly around the Santa Cruz City Council's latest tippy-toe shenanigans into the questions of civil liberties on the sleeping ban. As you know, in Santa Cruz, the sleeping ban makes most everybody who sleeps outside, with the few people who sleep in the River Street open-air shelter accepted, illegal after 11 o'clock at night. Well, the City Council changed that, and we're going to give you some details on those changes. We're going to talk to you about the push for curfews in other cities, and that's actually going to segue into this segment with Rebecca, who I'm going to try to get some reactions from her on how she regarded a curfew, though I perhaps can guess before we start. I'm going to give you the update from Berkeley and the surrender of the City Council there to development interests at their last City Council meeting. You're going to hear about the planned Keith McHenry Food Not Bombs tour, I should say the tour which may sponsor McHenry or may sponsor other people who will be going to talk to different cities to organize people and to spread the word about free radio in different cities and Food Not Bombs in different cities. You'll get an update on what's going on in the courts and their continuing harassment of people for essentially victimless crimes like sleeping here in the Santa Cruz area. Get a report on what's happening with the Above the Line Community Consortium, which is a group that's trying to raise money for homeless projects, and actually establish some new projects. We'll tell you about the Linda Edwards investigation and what's happening around that. Linda Edwards, the activist who died June 3rd after a year of liver cancer and was assaulted before she died. And more. KPFA up in Berkeley, an alternative radio station, has apparently decided to kick out its left-wingers, and we're going to tell you about that. And then I have a whole bunch of newspaper clippings in case nobody calls in. You're going to get to hear me nonstop for 2 hours. That could be quite a thrill. But yes, but just so I don't give you too much of a good thing, here's our guest. I will, but let me introduce you too, since you are the person that these curfew laws will impact. Moving the mic slightly your way here. There you go. Sign in.
Hello, it's me, Rebecca. I guess I'll define myself. I'm 19 years old. I have a home at this moment. Going to school, and I just finished doing a radio show. If you don't remember me, this is me. So here you go, giving a little background on the curfew laws.
Yeah, Rebecca is memorable. Actually, I don't think the curfew laws are going to really affect you. I think it's under 18, but they would have affected you 2 years ago, and you probably know people they would affect, and you're considerably younger than I am, so you can give the point of view from the other side of the 20 line. How long you been in Santa Cruz, Rebecca?
1 year, last month.
And you told me before the show that you haven't spent a lot of time on the streets, you're not homeless, you don't have a lot of contact with that, but you probably have an impression of Santa Cruz here in terms of the civil liberties situation, in terms of how police treat people, or perhaps you don't. What's your feeling about that, or have you had any sense from your year's stay here?
Well, the sense I've had is that the police tend to pick on the homeless people and kind of use them as an experimental, kind of like a practicing injustice on the homeless people, see how far they can get with it, and then it seems to, like, you know, spread from there. And so far, I think, I remember when I first came, there was a no sitting law on the sidewalk, and people were getting, there still is?
Yeah.
I thought that was overturned.
It was overturned and a new one was passed.
A new one was passed. I remember people getting tickets who, there's no way that they would be able to pay off these tickets, you know, it just seems like, seemed so pointless that these police were wasting time and money and, you know, busting people for sitting down on the sidewalk, and, I don't know.
Did you have any friends who were arrested for that?
When I first came to Santa Cruz, I didn't have a house, and I was kind of staying in my car, and some of the people who I was hanging around with at the time did get busted for that.
You say you stayed in your car. Mm-hmm. Were you ever harassed for that? How long were you living in your car?
Well, I was living in my car for a month, and I've never got harassed by anyone, but I did a lot of tiptoeing. I didn't really want to get too, I didn't want to be too obvious, you know? I felt this kind of tension that I couldn't.
How long?
Oh, a month.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't actually, no cop banged on your car. Were you kind of a stealth car? I mean, were you an obvious camper, or were you sort of an apparently abandoned vehicle, or what was your?
It was a station wagon with the seats down I slept in. And
downtown area?
Oh, I slept around West Cliff on one of the side streets.
And the neighbors obviously never complained about you.
No, I switched places every night.
And you never filed a complaint about yourself.
No, I did not.
And you never beat yourself up at saving the police the job.
Oh, no, no.
That's one of the buttons I like the most. It's support your local police, beat yourself up. It's a favorite button of mine. But actually, in Santa Cruz, I have not been beaten by the police, although I know others who have. Have you had any contact with the police in the last year, positive or negative, or secondhand contacts with police? Again, I'm looking for specific stories rather than apocryphal kind of, you know, fourth-hand stories, or any thoughts you might have on that?
I don't have any specific stories to tell.
So you haven't been bothered by police in the last year?
No, I haven't.
Have you been helped by police?
No, I've had no dealings with the police.
I see. Would you like to meet a police officer?
No, no. That's a... I appreciate the offer, but...
What about facilities for people? You're, of course, over 18, so... Actually, you can't go into bars or not? You can't,
no.
You can't go into bars. So you're still in a position where some of the facilities downtown are denied you. When you want to have a good time at night in terms of, you know, going out on to a place... What kind of a place would you go out to, and what do you think the situation is for young people around that? I guess I'm thinking really of people aged 14 to 18 more than you, 19 to 20, 21, but...
I think that by bars not letting people under 21 in, first of all, it's completely discriminatory, and to hear music, the one thing that's supposed to bring people together, to not let a certain age group in is completely ridiculous, if my opinion. You know, there's been times when I wanted to see music and I couldn't see it just because I wasn't a certain amount of years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that by not letting people in under 21, that, I mean, you find something else to do, and it's not necessarily going to be as positive as going to see a band play, you know, or you, like, have to entertain yourself. And
of course, it may make you more creative, right, I guess.
True.
Or procreative.
True. Goes both ways.
Have you, that sounds like a sort of a, almost an ideological statement. Do you have the sense that when you were under 18, I guess, where were you living when you were under 18?
In Los Angeles.
And Los Angeles doesn't have a curfew, or it does have a curfew, or is its curfew enforced if it has one?
They have a curfew, but it's not enforced unless they want, that, you know, I've had some friends who have, that has been the fallback of the police to get them out of a situation. It's kind of like a crutch, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that actually is one of the concerns about the curfew laws as they're being proposed here in Santa Cruz County. And then you suggested, Rebecca, and it's quite appropriate, and I think probably I should have done what you suggested, tell the audience about the upcoming curfew laws. Actually, the audience probably knows about it, those of us who have been listening into the show before, but the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors is considering a county-wide curfew law, which looks like it's only being opposed right now by one of the five supervisors, Marty Wormhout. And it's due to come back in August at a time when most of the younger constituents at the university and Cabrillo College will be out of town. So it may sneak on through in August, and that's one of the reasons I'm starting to raise the topic now in the hopes that we will get some kind of ripples here and begin to do some organizing against this law and for some positive alternatives for people who are young and essentially excluded from existing facilities, as well as viewed with suspicion by law enforcement officials because of their what they regard as their bizarre dress or their unusual facial ornaments or what you will. I don't see any ornaments on you. Are you just out of step? What's going on here?
I had a very bad experience with a piece of jewelry right now, and I'm still kind of getting over that.
I see. So a bad relationship with a piece of jewelry.
Yeah.
Yeah. That can happen. Abusive jewelry is one of those problems that's not really being properly dealt with.
It was a love-hate relationship.
It's a love-hate,
yeah.
Well, actually, Santa Cruz has a curfew law that is not being, the city of Santa Cruz has a curfew law that is not being enforced, I'm told, and also they tried to pass a second curfew law last spring, that is to say, actually, 94 in the spring, along with the downtown ordinances, which included the sitting ban that Rebecca spoke of, and they failed. That was severed from the package, and that was good. I may perhaps properly be accused of having a somewhat knee-jerk civil liberties orientation toward the question of restricting civil rights, because I tend to feel that that is the march of the future at the moment. The restriction of civil rights for people, with a few exceptions, is happening nationally. Newt Gingrich and the Republican Congress is leading the charge, and falling right in line is cut-and-run Clinton, who is, as you know, our president. And then at the state level, you have these laws that I was reading about today that will take your car if you drive without a license, and take your license if you smoke a joint in your house. And it's an endless process whereby more and more prisons are being built, more and more innocent activities are being criminalized. And we need really to be very vigilant at the most local level around these things, because I think that is where we can have the most impact, with the exceptions of times around elections. And even then, elections are largely popularity contests and spending contests around very, very narrow, limited issues defined by people I don't agree with, and I doubt that many of the listeners agree with. But anyway, curfews. Let's not ramble too far afield here. I love to ramble. I probably should talk about the specifics of the proposed curfew, although it's not actually been hammered down. But I can, rather than do that at the moment, because I don't have that information right directly in front of me, I will say that the law in that's proposed, it works out something like this, that if you're 14 to 16, possibly 14 to 18, you have to go directly home after 10 or 11 o'clock at night, unless you have engaging in some specific activity that's, I guess, a meeting, a movie, you're with a guardian. There's a couple of other exceptions. You're waiting at a bus stop for a bus to get back from work. You're working. In other words, hanging out becomes illegal after that period of time. And such a law was passed in San Jose and Palo Alto, I guess East Palo Alto, about a year ago. And advocates for this kind of curfew have been citing the effects after this law, the consequences of this law, the positive benefits in San Jose, as a basis for supporting laws in other cities. They claim, for instance, and stats do bear them out, that arrests for crimes during the period of the curfew drop by 16% in the last year. What they don't mention, however, is that crimes for all youth at other times has risen. Now, you might say, well, that may mean even more that the curfew is a great idea because, hey, even though general crime is on the rise, crime during curfew times is down, showing that it's a great idea. But it could also mean that the resentments created produce crime at other times. In fact, it has been also shown that most crimes by young people happen like between 3 and 6 during the day. So it may be a phony solution and a misappropriation of funding and police and public resources. That's the concern of some of us. What's your view, Rebecca?
I don't know where to step in.
If you have any thoughts on this, and don't feel, you know, because I don't have a view, I just heard this. That's fine.
All I can say is, like, how I felt when I was that age. And if I had a place to go, you know, when I was that age, I had a home and everything. So I didn't really feel the need to go out and just hang out, you know, as people who are homeless might, you know, they don't have a home to go to, maybe they might want to, you know, just hang out on the street because there's nowhere to go and you can't really, there's still a sleeping ban.
There's a sleeping ban, yes.
So, I mean, you caught sleeping, you have to be awake anyways. You
can't cover up with blankets, right?
And, I don't know, it seems obviously, I don't know what the word is.
Stupid, abusive?
Yeah.
Just dumb?
Just a dumb idea.
Bananas? Out the window?
And I don't see, like, how anyone could see it as a good idea, having been that age. Having being a person, you know,
well,
being
I've
a,
never been
a
that
member
age,
of life.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah, I didn't hang out on street corners and smoke dope when I was a kid, I can tell you that. But, you know, there are plenty of people out there who are on the streets, and hopefully I will bring you some of their testimony and some of their experiences in the shows ahead. They're invited to call in. If you have ever been under 18 or are now under 18, you are invited to give a call to 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM, which is the show you're listening to at this very moment. So stop your car, march over to a payphone, park your bike. Hey, get up and borrow and panhandle a quarter so you can give a call to this show and let us know just what's going on out there on the streets and how you feel specifically about laws that would make it illegal for people to be out after 10 o'clock at night if they are under 18, unless they're doing good activities. The phone lines are open. Rebecca, anything else you want to say, or maybe announcements about your own show that you think might be helpful for people who are blown away by the last 4 hours?
Just that I guess I'll be here next week, next Thursday from 2 to 10 also. And after this show, you should go outside, but not till after this show. Or listen to this show after I get your transistor radio, you know, a lawn chair. But definitely get on outside.
Phone, right?
Yeah.
All right. So Rebecca leaves us here, leaves me alone in the studio with a dead phone line. A great silence gathering about me. But that's okay, because I have my papers, my literature, and my microphone, and you have me. So we will continue with Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, which happens every week, actually twice a week, Monday and Fridays, 10 to 12. Well, what happened this week earlier, as I mentioned on the air, was the City Council's action in changing, in a very small way, the city's oppressive sleeping ban, which, as I told you before, and you probably know, makes it illegal to sleep anywhere outside of a domicile, whether in your vehicle, whether with the permission of an owner on private property in the front yard, illegal to sleep between 11 and 8:30 in Santa Cruz, in the city limits. The only exceptions to that are the open-air shelter, which is at Highway 1 and Highway 9. For anyone who's listening to a radio and doesn't have a place to sleep tonight, there's usually a place to cram somebody in, although head of the program, Paul Merceau, has agreed that the program can only really accommodate a fraction of the number of people without shelter in Santa Cruz, the city area, which is 800 to 1,500 people by my estimate. Or more, who knows? That was the estimate I gave 2 or 3 years ago. It may have grown since then. And it's pretty much a seat-of-the-pants kind of estimate. City Council, as I said, made a change. City Council, back in December of last year, proposed a change. Some council members, Mayor Byers, Council Member Kennedy, Council Member Scott, were talking about a place for vehicles to sleep, specifically an opportunity for churches to let vehicles park there and people to sleep in the church parking lots, which apparently they've been doing anyway, and the police have been winking at, which I think is very positive. I commend Chief Belcher, I commend the police department, I commend Council Member Kennedy. You know, that's great. Of course, I don't commend them for the incessant tickets that are being given outside that sanctuary and outside the open-air shelter, but and that is most homeless people are in that situation. That's, again, the basic fact which shouldn't be overlooked. But as I said, the council decided to change the law. In a first reading of the law, that will allow churches to have homeless people or people in vans, whether homeless or not, sleep in their van on the church property if the church gives them permission, if they have a valid driver's license, if they're over, I think you have to be over 18, the driver has to be over 18. And also, presumably, if there are no complaints from neighbors that involve littering, garbage, noise, and so forth. I mean, the normal rules apply. But only 3 vehicles per church parking lot. In other words, the church, a religious institution, part of its religious testimony in the world, part of its philosophy, part of its reason for being is to provide charity and sustenance for the poor. That's a primary tenet of the Christian religion and of many other religions as well. They are told, well, you can do it only for 3 vehicles, even though it's your property, even if there's no complaints, even if there's no littering and garbage. So you might, in a way, consider this law to be a restriction rather than an expansion, although in fact it is an expansion, because previously it was all considered by the law book illegal. But now our city council has said 3 and no more. So the 4th vehicle that comes up, like the 4th wise man who showed up late at Bethlehem, is considered a wise guy and told to, you know, take a hike down the road. One hopes that he will be sent to another church property where she or he will be able to park and sleep. There are numbers of churches around town. I don't know how many of them are opting in to allow people to sleep on their property in their vans, although it's, I would think it's less trouble than setting up mats inside the churches, which is what churches do in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and let people sleep there, and I commend them for it. They've done that for, a decade. I understand the idea first arose under Mayor Bruce Van Allen back in the early 80s, and hats off to him if that's true. He was at the council meeting, too, on Tuesday night when the first reading of this ordinance allowing 3 vehicles with the permission of the church to park on church property passed. It's coming up for a second reading in case anyone wants to check this out. In a way, it's rather trivial, and I wasn't even sure that I wanted to go to this meeting. I went anyway, and it was good that I did because I had other things that I felt was important to say, and I'll kind of share those with you in the hour ahead. But again, this law seems a strange, minor kind of law change, which, for instance, is opposed, and was only opposed by one council member, Mary Beth Campbell, the self-appointed or self-declared conservative on the council. She opposed it because it was really not entirely clear to me why she opposed it, but she said that it was litter might be involved, and the city council should spend public money instead to help homeless people with shelter instead of letting people sleep in their vehicles. I wonder if her mother ever comes to town to visit in a camper. Probably not. Hard to tell. I haven't talked to her. I don't want to make assumptions about her family and her income level and so forth, but her wisdom level on this one, I think, is fair game, and she was wrong, but again, I'm not really concerned about her so much because she doesn't control the council majority. The council majority has unfortunately been in the wrong without cease for the last decade and a half, even though the progressives have been in control, and it's hard for me to say it's refreshing to see them pass this law. I mean, it's good, you know, it's good. But, and maybe I should be patting them on the back and saying good work, and I did commend them at the mic and said it's a good law. But frankly, my general feeling, as reported by the Sentinel, or the Urinal, as I call our daily paper, it was not enough. It's not enough at all, and I'm afraid it's going to be used as not as a start, but as an excuse to call a halt and a finish to further action. They're going to keep pointing to themselves how wonderful they are about having done this proposal. But let's say they don't. I mean, I don't know. I don't wish to jump the gun on that. I did propose that they consider expanding the law immediately. A, let more vehicles park there unless there are complaints, and B, that they establish a roadside resting law, which is what the county has. In 1985, Supervisor Patton successfully got the Board of Supervisors to pass a law, which is on the books, that if you sleep in the county in a vehicle off to the side for several hours on the road because you're tired, that's okay. That's legal. That's an exception to... there isn't even a county camping ban. There's actually a provision for a camping ban in certain areas of the county, such as Pasatiempo and Tanner Heights. But you cannot be theoretically molested by police for doing that. It is specifically declared to be legal. But unfortunately, Mark Tracy's deputies, previously Al Noren's troopers, the county police, have misinformed people repeatedly about their right to sleep on county property, or let's say on the roadways when they're tired. They don't say, are you sleeping here just for a few hours, because you can only do it for a few hours and then drive on. They tell them to move. And in effect, they illegally push people around from spot to spot, or they were when we investigated this in 1988 and 89, and I think as late as 93 they were doing this, and I suspect they're still doing it. I mean, I haven't heard of any policy changes on this one, but I recommend they follow the law, and I recommend that people assert their rights under the law, that if you are approached by a county police officer because you're sleeping in your car, that you inform him that it is legal to sleep in your vehicle under the roadside resting provision. And it's also, there is no countywide camping ban in most parts of the county. And what section of the law is he enforcing, please? Of course, he may find something else to hassle you with, and that's always a risk when you say that to a police officer, but you can do it in a friendly way too. You know, ask them, tell them that you're taking a law class and you really would like to know for your class. You want to share your experience, whatever. So anyway, the city council passed a small exception to the camping ban. It was a narrower exception than they first had proposed. Celia Scott had proposed that it be legal for people to sleep in their front yard of their own house as an exception to the camping ban. Right now, you can sleep in a backyard or an enclosed side yard. I think that she included enclosed front yard. And she became nervous that wouldn't pass, or it would create too much controversy, or Catherine Byers decided they just wanted to go for the teeny tiny baby step, and they took the baby step. And I guess babies who sleep in vans should be grateful that they now have official legal sanction. The church invites them, and they're only one of three vehicles on that lot they can sleep there, so that's good. I also propose that the city consider certain industrial areas of the city, given the current shelter crisis and housing crisis and affordable housing crisis declared in 1990 by the city after a study by Paul Brendel and Linda LeMaster and others who did a survey for the Community Action Board, finding that there was a housing emergency in the city under Mayor Wormhout, acknowledged that and passed that housing emergency, that certain areas, industrial areas, be opened up for people to park and sleep in if they have to. In other words, this will not have people sleeping downtown in their vehicles, will not have people sleeping in their vehicles in residential areas, but in places where, for instance, big rigs already pull over out near Fair and Swift Streets, you will be able to sleep if you are in a Volkswagen van or a big bus, without being hassled by the police, unless you're caught pissing on the street or making a mess or creating a problem. You know, that seems to me it should be obvious, and also it's a question of fairness, and I think fairness has always been the issue, at least I've been concerned with, and is the real issue here. Even council member Jane Yokoyama, who I have termed Hokey Mama for what I consider to be her phony positions on poverty issues that I've been concerned with, and that has concerned a lot of homeless stuff and the camping ban, spoke about supporting this law. She initially was, before she was on the city council in 1988, she was a member of a commission which brought a proposal to city council asking that people not be ticketed except on complaint. That is to say that the police be directed to stop running out on their own initiative and messing with people. And the city council, under Mayor John Laird, refused to do anything with that one. And when Jane Yokoyama that fall was elected to the city council, she herself turned right around and abandoned her support of that proposal and started using the specious Rotkin-type arguments. Mike Rotkin is a council member who was opposed to making it legal for people to sleep outside for years. She said that camping is not suitable for an urban environment. Actually, that's what Rotkin said. She said that she didn't want people to be able to sleep outside legally because it was an insult to them. They needed affordable housing. She didn't volunteer her house, however, until that magical and idealistic pie-in-the-sky time came. So we now have a sleeping ban still in effect, which affects the overwhelming majority of, well, let's say, at least three-quarters of the homeless people in Santa Cruz every night. Unfortunately, this similar law has been found constitutional. The Santa Ana sleeping ban, Santa Ana is a city in Orange County, has been found constitutional after a very exciting and hopeful lower court decision which said that it was a violation of the right to travel, a violation of cruel and unusual punishment, and a violation of equal protection of the laws. The California State Supreme Court did a backflop, a backflip, and actually ignored both the prosecution and the defense and said, no, you know, it's a legitimate public purpose. You can criminalize sleeping for people at night. After all, actually, I wish I had the decision before me, but I did a show on that. And the decision is a bad one, but there are some hopeful signs still, because at the federal level, for example, in Miami, it is federal courts have ruled that you cannot criminalize people for sleeping outside at night unless there are legal places for them to be, an obvious point. And in the Pottinger case, they ruled that Miami must cease and desist its practice of rousting and harassing homeless people, and that is still the law in Miami, as I understand it, at this time. And the Department of Justice here in California weighed in with a brief in which they supported that argument in the Tobe case. And the Tobe case was the unfortunate Santa Ana case, which the California Supreme Court ruled and sent it back and said, you know, go in there and hassle those homeless people is just fine. But that's the state courts. The federal courts can overrule the state courts on constitutional grounds, and I hope they will, as they did in Florida. But that's not immediately in the cards. So for folks who are fighting the sleeping ban, and there are folks fighting the sleeping ban, I got a call from someone earlier this week. A man is in jail. Mike the Wonder Dog, he's known as to his friends, who was initially arrested for sleeping in an abandoned house and charged with trespass because he wanted to evade arrest under the sleeping ban. He actually would not have been arrestable in that abandoned house under the sleeping ban because it is a domicile. So, in fact, he was following the law by sleeping inside a house, but unfortunately trespassing on abandoned property. He came up for he's up for a third strike, I think, for what he has described as a phony charge of, is it receiving stolen property? It's some confusing charge which he had hoped to beat, but initially these charges came out of problems that arose from the sleeping ban, and he went to court on Thursday, yesterday, and I haven't heard a report on what's happened with his case. If anybody knows please give me a call here at the radio station. And the lines are open, all you eager talkers, 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to, 89.3 FM, here in Santa Cruz. The station that wants to hear from you and will allow you to say what no other radio station will let you say. Anything you want to say, you get to say. Now, if you start repeating yourself or I get bored, I will cut you off. But I haven't cut anybody off yet, so I guess I must have a pretty high level of tolerance and boredom. So what's coming up on the agenda here? Around anti-homeless laws, several organizations have kind of been lingering in the background and concerned with these issues, not doing too much in the way of public demonstrations, turning out a few flyers now and then. One of those organizations is my favorite, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is me and whoever I can round up at the time to publicize ongoing abuses. There'll be an opportunity for people to do something next week, in case you're interested. There's a meeting of the Downtown Management Corporation. Now, the Downtown Management Corporation is the body, the corporate body, that oversees the HOSTS program. Now, the HOSTS, as you may know, are these green-shirted grinners who walk up and down Pacific Avenue helpfully telling people not to sit on the sidewalk, helpfully informing the police about marijuana deals, helpfully telling musicians and drummers to move off the avenue, and indeed sometimes actually helping people with information. I recall at one point a woman wanted a bus ticket to San Jose, or she was threatening to sleep in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. She had been refused admission to the Interfaith Satellite Shelter program. She asked me to take her downtown, and I did. And the guy, I told him her situation, and he said, okay, I'll get her a bus ticket, and by God, he did. And so I want to commend the HOSTS. Maybe you should ask them for bus tickets to San Jose if you can't find a legal place to sleep in Santa Cruz. Maybe that will become the solution of the future. And I speak sarcastically, and I think I should, but I want to acknowledge that it's not all bad with the HOSTS, but unfortunately, because of the downtown ordinances that they are committed to enforcing, the laws that make it illegal to sit 10 feet from a shop, the sitting ban, which Rebecca mentioned earlier, and as I said in the background, is still on the books. They've replaced it with a newer law. You can now sit, if you don't sit 10 feet from a shop, you can now sit if you don't lie down completely. You can now sit if you don't sit 4 feet from a telephone booth or a telephone or drinking fountain or 50 feet from a cash dispensing machine, which would be anything from an ATM to a Coke machine, but not a newspaper rack or a parking meter. So it's true that you see people sitting on the mall around the Food Not Bombs meal at Cathcart and Pacific without being harassed by the HOSTS or the police, but it's equally true that I got a report from Candlelight Kim Argula that she was told to move when she sat down near Woolworth's downtown, not blocking the area, not blocking the entrance, not blocking the sidewalk, just sitting there. So the HOSTS are on the move, and one person has been convicted already of the new sitting ban. His name is Eric Marcus. He was convicted in, I believe, February, and sentenced to a $100 fine. The wanton Dave Jacobs was convicted of sitting down in the, I guess it was Cedar Street garage, one of the parking structures, lying down. He was lying down there. He wasn't blocking anything, but he was lying down, and the HOSTS, in order to power play, wanted him to move. And so he said, no, I'm doing just fine here, and I'm not bothering anybody. And they called the cops and had him ticketed. So they're doing their bit to engage in power plays downtown that make it uncomfortable for people who challenge their authority. But I must point out to you, listeners, and many of you are out there fighting these laws a year and a half ago, by peaceful, nonviolent civil disobedience, sitting down at Cathcart and Pacific and supporting Food Not Bombs in the famous May 11th police riot. I want to point out to you that the reason these laws are not being enforced as vigorously as they could be is because of the threat of those demonstrations. Because they know that Food Not Bombs does serve a meal once a week on the mall, and they know the demonstrations can materialize again if the circumstances warrant it. Actually, I think the circumstances warrant it right now, but if an egregious and really obvious example of police abuse comes up, then people, I think, can be mobilized to come and do what they did on May 11th, sit down on the sidewalk peacefully, sing music, dance, play drums, and publicize to the city and the community that the sidewalk belongs to the community, does not belong to the merchants, and it does not belong to the police department. And it certainly doesn't belong to the hosts. It belongs to everybody. So that, I want to thank you for coming out and supporting the rights of the community to maintain and use their public space. I'm not just talking about the rights of poor people. This is the rights of everybody. Because you don't have to be poor to be intimidated by the police. And if once the police intimidate the poor people, they go on to the next group that they're told to intimidate, or they decide to intimidate. And unfortunately, this is not a slur on the police department. This is not an attack on the character of the individuals who work in the police department. This is simply a statement as to the nature of what happens when you join the police force, and the nature of a police force in a society that is committed to the division of wealth and resources that we have in our society. It is committed to maintaining a system of plunder and theft for a few people, and need and sickness and want for many people, and slavery for virtually everybody. I mean, that's sort of the bottom line. Now, these are pretty radical statements. Certainly we have some well-intentioned, well-spoken conservative who's willing to give a quick call to the station and defend the rights and prerogatives and dignity of the police department and the society. Hey, the phone lines are open. Give a call here to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. Phone number 427-3772, 427-3772. We want you to call in. Anyway, I didn't quite get to finish what I was saying. I tend to meander. The Downtown Management Corporation is meeting next week. They control the hosts. And actually, the mayor is on the board of directors, as is Councilmember Celia Scott, the most liberal council member on the city council in Santa Cruz. And they're meeting on July 20th, that's Thursday, at 8:30 in the morning, right above Paper Visions in the Melrose building. And I don't have the exact address of that. That's on Pacific Avenue. It's right around the coffee roasting company on the other side of the street. So if you're interested in checking out the hosts, July 20th, 8:30 in the morning, kind of early, but that's how it goes. And you can go and testify as to whether you think the hosts are doing a good job. Now, I've kind of reported on the hosts on different shows, and I'm quite outspoken about them when I'm on the mall and speaking on the sidewalk on this issue. I think generally they're a bad part of the community downtown there, that they are serving a monopolistic merchant interest, that they are not a fair and open kind of, they're not being even-handed in how they treat people downtown. I was particularly concerned about their telling people to move without telling them who was complaining, about their admitting that they were paid by First Alarm Security or bossed by First Alarm Security, which is the kind of, and taking their orders from the police department. So I'm not without my own definite opinions on the hosts, but I like to think that they can change and they can improve. And I think coming to a meeting like this, that the Downtown Management Corporation could be helpful in giving them input. I mean, I've suggested that they serve as a way of encouraging people to file complaints against the police department if a problem arises on them. All they could have civilian police review forms in their little office, which is right next to the Del Mar Theater. They could if they wanted. They haven't so far that I'm aware of. They could do other things too. They could actually they could act as a true mediating force. Instead of calling police, if a problem arises with a merchant, they could act as a sort of a group that really tries to do give and take and hear openly what both sides have to say. That, incidentally, is being pursued, as I may have mentioned in a past show, by the downtown mediators, which are two people, Kim Hallinan and Daniel Robin, hired by the city, who are trying to find a mechanism for peacefully resolving problems and establishing a, quote, code of conduct downtown, which I believe should include proper conduct by the merchants toward poor people, proper conduct by citizens toward poor people on the streets, as well as the reverse, no harassment of people. You can't get your, if you're spare changing and you don't get spare change, inappropriate to begin threatening, harassing, or abusing those who are passing by. By the way, it is legal to panhandle in Santa Cruz, even under the downtown ordinances, in very specific spots and in very specific manners. You can't panhandle if you're sitting down anywhere. You can't panhandle in a group of two or more. You can't panhandle after dark. You can't panhandle a car. You can't panhandle within 10 feet of an entranceway. And you also can't panhandle with a certain number of feet of a crosswalk or a curb. So you really need an extensive map to figure it out. Now, in practice, panhandlers are, I believe, ignored or discouraged rather than cited or harassed by police. I haven't yet heard of a panhandling case taken to court, though I understand that there have been a few cases. You see, panhandling at the state level is a civil right. A federal court, I'm sorry,